on 1116 SEN. Bush and the Burbs for Toyota's Good for Footy program. Local Toyota dealers supporting local clubs. Discover more at toyota.com.au/AFL.
El Berbos con Bushes. If we were being broadcast in Mexico, but we're not. Toyota's Good for Footy program brings us the program. Local Toyota dealers getting behind their local football clubs. You can discover more at toyota.com.au/AFL. And Paul Daffy personally comes to us courtesy of the Standard Hotel. Good food, good conversation, a good old-fashioned pub atmosphere in the back streets of Fitzroy. Hard to find but easy to love. The Standard Hotel. A good evening to you, Daff.
Good evening, Finey.
Welcome to Wednesday.
Yes. I mean, it just rolls on. So thanks for having me on Wednesday night, given that the finals are on tomorrow night. Had a great chat. I went to the Standard, met the publican Paul O'Brien for, you know, the euphemistic one beer, which, of course, no one ever goes out for one beer. Paul coached Euroa. It's his home club. His father, Dick, is the most famous coach in the club's history, one of the most famous coaches in the Goulburn Valley. Paul coached Euroa also. But he also had a few years up at Deniliquin as a young bloke when he was coaching. And we're talking about his career, saying how he loved it up there. And so one of the things he enjoyed doing was he gave Leo Barry his first senior game of footy.
Great.
So Leo was 15, clearly a good young footballer, but Paul did the right thing. When you're going to give a 15-year-old, it's the right thing to do, or the sensitive thing to do, is to go and ask the young fella's parents. So Paul went off and asked Mr. and Mrs. Barry, very respectful people. They said, "You think that's okay, Paul? We think it's okay." And Paul said, "Don't worry, I'll take care of him." And Paul was very capable of taking care of the young fellas. Leo played. But the lingering, and of course, Leo Barry went on to play Sydney a couple of years later, but you know, enjoyed himself at Deniliquin as a young bloke. The bloke, I forget his name, but the bloke who got dropped for Leo Barry still dines out on the story. I'm the one who put that young fella on the path to his AFL career. So
the guy at
at Deniliquin,
at Denny,
it was dropped for Leo Barry. He was at the pub. He came down to Melbourne a month ago and dropped in and saw Paul. Still, you know, telling people on the block he got dropped for Leo Barry. That's his claim to fame as a footballer, being dropped for a certain player.
That was
quite amusing. But the Barrys are actually from Culgoa, near where my mother's from. So she always claims that Deniliquin wrongfully claimed Leo Barry, but the family moved over there before Leo was born, I think. But anyway, that was just you know, you hear those stories in local footy. Probably every club's got a story like that, or a bloke like that who doesn't take himself too seriously and tells a joke like that against himself, which is I reckon is one of the, you know, it's a great thing about local footy.
So that is, of course, part of Southern New South Wales, Deniliquin.
It is, yeah.
Where, and very much Australian rules football predominantly is the sport played in that part of New South Wales. Where does New South Wales lose its AFL and starts to become rugby league? Is there a...
Yeah, it's pretty clear, actually.
Yeah. Is there a Mason... What is it, the Mason-Dixon
line? Mason-Dixon line, which separates the north from the south in the United States. It's the Murrumbidgee River, basically. To the Murrumbidgee, it is all footy. And after the Murrumbidgee, north of the Murrumbidgee, it starts getting murky. They still play footy, but rugby league has a massive say. Basically, Wagga is on the Murrumbidgee, as is Narrandera. I think Gan Main is as well. Hay, Balranald. So when you get down to Balranald, that's basically a footy town. But all those other towns are 50-50 footy rugby league. So I reckon Wagga and Darwin are the only 50-50 towns in Australia. Like they are genuinely 50-50 footy and rugby league. If you go north of the Murrumbidgee, it's rugby league becomes more prominent. I mean, the Danaher's from Mungeri, which is an hour and a half north of the Murrumbidgee, that's north of West Wyalong, but it's a quirk of that town, basically because of the Danaher's, that it is a footy town. So the Danaher's were from near you mentioned Euroa before. They're from Jim Danaher was telling me that they're from near Euroa, but they took settlement blocks. A lot of Victorians moved up when they opened up land around the time of the First World War, and the Victorians went up and they took footy with them. And the trains are essential. So a town like Deniliquin, a lot of sheep, wheat, The trains went from Melbourne to Deniliquin before they went from Sydney to Deniliquin. So Melbourne people took footy up with them, and it became a footy town. It's basically whether you were Melbourne or Sydney's orbit, and Melbourne got in with the trains before Sydney did. That determines, went a long way to determining whether it was a footy town or not.
I guess given the almost, the parochialism that is held by some AFL fans and rugby league fans to their own code and the imaginary war that exists between the two, I shall rename it not the Mason-Dixon line, but the Maginot line.
Maginot?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, that was the famous line of fortification in the Second World War.
Okay, yep.
In France, named after the war minister, I believe, that was supposed to keep the Nazis out of part of France and the lowlands. Of course, it didn't work. They got there.
I mean, you've taken on...
Just like Aussie rules, we'll get there eventually.
You've taken the conversation to a different plane. But a mate of mine always at Narrandera, you see CUB signs at the front of the pub?
Yeah. And from then on, it's Tui's.
Then on, it's Tui's.
Good footballer from Narrandera. Played for St Kilda.
Terry Smith. No. Terry O'Neill was fullback from South. Who's from Narrandera? Who's a St Kilda player?
Via Geelong. Jim Dernan.
Okay, yes. Yep.
Stocky back pocket.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure.
In what era?
Early 1980s.
Oh, okay. Righto.
Not to be confused with. Oh, sorry. Hang on. Now I'm confused. It was either John Dernan. There was a John Dernan and a Jim Dernan. I'll find out which one was which in a moment.
All right. So you go through, if you're driving to Brisbane up the Newell Highway, that's when, you know, I always reckon you see your first uprights at West Wyalong. You don't actually see the footy ground in Narrandera. And Narrandera is probably a little bit more prominent footy than rugby league. So you see the CUB sign still, and you also get Melbourne newspapers. You don't get Melbourne newspapers after Narrandera. It's all Daily Sydney Telegraph and that sort
of thing. So life ends there.
Well, life as we know it, finally. Yes, that's right. I've always felt sort of the more natural divide rather than the Murray is where you get out of footy territory.
Now, it was Jim Dernan who played with Melbourne.
Yes, I was going to say.
So Jim Dernan is not whom after, it's Johnny Dernan. Same spelling. Durnan.
Yeah, I remember Terry O'Neill played fullback for South Melbourne, late 70s, early 80s. I think he went to Fitzroy rather than go up to Sydney. He was from Narrandera. Victor Hugo. Remember the truckie with the beard? Only played two games. He was about 27.
In the 70s, early 70s?
Yeah. He kicked, I've written about this in country footy terms, he kicked 11 goals in a second semi and 11 goals in a grand final from Narrandera in the major league in the Riverina. South Melbourne tried to get him down because that was in the country zone, the Riverina. South Melbourne tried to get him down for almost 10 years until finally they got him down. He played a couple of night games and he played two senior games and then he went back to driving trucks in Narrandera. But he was always known as the truckie with a big beard.
John Dernan played a single game for Geelong, 21 games for St Kilda, from Narrandera in New South Wales.
Okay. That must have been before zoning, was it? Maybe not.
No, played the one game for Geelong in 79 and 21 games for St Kilda between 80 and 82.
Anyway, look what a beer at the Standard Hotel has generated, finally. And another interesting conversation.
Zach Williams from GWS is from Narrandera.
Is he? He's a good player, isn't he?
I've been told off the SMS, but no reason to not believe that.
No, well, there's a lot of blokes in that GWS team. Jacob Hoppers from Leeton, not far away. Lockhart.
Wasn't Luke Bruce from...
Harry Perryman's from Lockhart, which is near
Luke
Wagga.
Bruce.
He's from Temora.
Temora.
That is a rugby league town. It's always struck me as unusual. Why does Luke Bruce play footy? I've heard of interview. He just said he liked it, but that's a strongly rugby league town. Tomorrow, that's north of Wagga.
Yep.
There is a great history of footy there, but rugby league is definitely the stronger code. The interesting one was Isaac Smith was from Cootamundra and went down to study in Ballarat. I still don't know why he went to Ballarat to study, but just played at Redan with mates until. Finally, he got persuaded to go down to North Ballarat halfway through the season 1 year and then up playing their flag and he was drafted in the first round by Hawthorn at the end of that season. So that was a momentous season. Isaac Smith was actually studying sports science and was looking to go into sports management So if that's the case, he thought he would be unlikely to be able to play footy on Saturday afternoons. So he planned to finish his course, just stop playing for Redan, and that would be the end of his footy career. His life took a very, very different turn with that decision to go to North Ballarat and then on to Hawthorn, didn't it? So he's from up the Riverina as well, actually. There's three of them in those Hawthorn teams: Luke Roost, Isaac Smith, and the other one escapes me.
From New South Wales?
Matt Suckling, actually. He's from Wagga.
Yep. And there's two boys from Narrandera on the list. At
the Giants?
Yep. As mentioned, Zach Williams.
Who's the other one?
Matthew Flynn.
Don't know him. Just
200 centimetre lad.
Mm-hmm.
So a tall boy. He's from Narrandera in New South Wales. Townsend from Richmond's from Leeton.
Yeah, well, he was a Giants player, wasn't he?
And Harry Perryman's from Collingully. New South Wales certainly providing some footballers.
There's some good. All those blokes are really draft. Well, Zach Williams wasn't, but Perryman, Jacob Hopper, they're very early draft picks.
Where's
as well.
Culcairn?
Culcairn is almost halfway between Albury and Wagga. So that's South Riverina.
Yep.
Down towards, probably more towards Albury, actually.
Jeremy Finlayson from GWS is from Culcairn.
They wear the old Lions jumpers, Fitzroy jumpers.
A couple of boys from Albury and New South Wales well represented on the GWS list.
You can see where the other...
Killarney Vale. Is that Sydney?
No. Killarney Vale, that's where the McVeighs are from. That's on the New South Wales central coast. That's up near Gosford.
Daniel Lloyd's from there.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, the McVeighs' father, I forget his name.
Daniel Lloyd played a couple of games this year.
He's actually a great... Matt Granlund's the one to tell you about this. He's actually a great story because he wasn't from a footy background at all. I don't even know why he started playing footy, but very soon afterwards he was on the radar with the New South Wales Academy and then onto the Sydney. But he comes from a very unfooty background, apparently, and shows a lot of promise. I think the McVeighs' father was played for Williamstown. Then he went up to the Central Coast and they stayed up there. But Troy Luff is the other one from that club, I think. He was from Killarney Vale as well.
And then there's players on the Sydney list that are very much New South Wales boys. The most interesting is Cardiff Park, which is in Newcastle. Cardiff, which is the home of Isaac Heaney.
Is it? He's my favourite player. He's a complete gun, that bloke.
Newcastle is a real dead spot for AFL football traditionally.
I have read about it. I just think he was just spotted by footy people and they persuaded him. And I don't know how he got into it originally. It was through a friend or something, but it's a steal. He's a fantastic player.
And then a lot of Sydney boys.
He doesn't get enough credit for Sydney's rise in the second half of the year after he got over glandular fever.
Absolutely. But Sydney have actually got a lot of Sydney players. So
how many?
Well, Daniel Robinson is from Mossman. Dane Rampey's from Eastern Suburbs and the University of New South Wales.
Is Mossman like in Sydney?
Yep.
North Shore?
Yep. I don't know where, but it's in Sydney. Never even knew that a club. Sam Naismith is from North Shore Football Club.
Yep, wear Essendon jumpers, yeah.
Callum Mills is from the North Shore Football Club.
Yep.
Jared McVeigh is from Pennant Hills.
Well, he's from Killarney Vale, went to Pennant Hills to play in the top comp. That's in the northwest suburbs of Sydney. That's the strongest.
Kieran and Brandon Jack are from Pennant Hills.
Traditional footy club. Yes, yep.
Jordan Foote is from Maroubra.
Fairhigan, my brother lives in Maroubra.
Harry Cunningham's from Turvey Park, which is Wagga, I think.
Yeah, look, that's a strong footy club. Wagga, that started in the late 50s in the new suburbs of Wagga in those days, and it's been a very strong club ever since. Paul Hawke is one player to come from Turvey Park.
Sam Murray on their sub list is from another New South Wales, Henty. That's on the border, isn't it?
No. Henty is also between Wagga and Albury.
Yep.
That's very strong footy country. That's the basis of the Hume League there.
Yep.
So south of Wagga, that's strong footy country, that's South Riverina. Henty are known as the Swampies, because there's a swamp next to the town. So the club is a good nickname that it reflects the area. They're the Swampies. They wear the reverse South Melbourne, white with a red V.
But certainly plenty of New South Wales and Sydney boys on their list.
Yes. Now, back to Deniliquin, that is a footy town. There's very, very little rugby league in Deniliquin.
So let's have a look at some results in finals, and we'll just fly through them. Eastern Football League, what happened?
Both lower-ranked teams won. This doesn't happen often finally, but we're having Daniel King, the South Croydon captain, on after the break. We had Daniel mid-season, and he was fantastic. Just a genuine bloke who loves his club. And I just saw a tweet on Saturday night, just catching the tram home, from South Croydon, best win in the club's history. I thought, well, gee, there's one to investigate during the week. And it must be. It's their first finals victory in Division 1, and they've defeated Baldwin, who've won four of the last five flags. After looking like they were going to get overrun, certainly in the third quarter, and then again in the last, they couldn't quite make headway. They've ended up winning by 17 points. And the question to Daniel will tell us about the greatest win in the club's history. Blackburn defeated Doncaster, so Doncaster have gone out straight away again for the second year in a row by 38 points. So Blackburn, no certainties to make the finals a few weeks out. In fact, a week out, there were no certainties. But they've ended up having a good win. Doncaster was second on the ladder 2 weeks from the finals. Anyway, they've ended up fifth. Luke Conker kicked four and was best on ground there. That's Reese's brother. And Ryan Bathey, an ex-AFL player, of course, was at Geelong. He might have even been at Richmond for a season. Then he went out to Keilor with a lot of other Richmond blokes, but he's played a good game for Blackburn on the weekend.
Northern Football League, and again, the lower-ranked teams getting the upsets.
Yes, happened again. Narrowly, Northcote Park defeating Bundoora by 2 points in the qualifying. I saw Greensboro beat Northcote Park about 6 weeks ago. They looked fantastic. Couldn't understand how they were down the ladder early in the season. Very windy day, I must say. Very much a home ground advantage on their ground there. But this week they've defeated West Preston Lakeside by 31 points in the elimination final. 9-8-62 to 3-13-31. So fair to say West Preston has kicked themselves out of that one. This week, McLeod versus Northcote Park in the second semi at Preston on Saturday, and Bundoora versus Greensboro first semi at Preston on Sunday.
Deer Park flex their muscles in the Western region again?
Too good. I've got a mate who went to that game. He said Deer Park is big and good. They're as formidable a local footy. This friend knows as much about local footy as anyone I know. They've had a great win defeating Sunshine by 77 points in the second semi. So that's pretty comprehensive, isn't it? Jace Perkins kicked six. Shannon Burns, Geelong Premiership player. Dual Geelong Premiership player, I think. He was best on ground. Hoppers Crossing defeated Spotswood. That's an upset. Finally, Hoppers Crossing would not have been favoured before that game at all. But they've beaten Spotswood, who've got a great finals record over the years. But this year, the Woodsmen out in straight sets after going down by 40 points in the first semi. This week, Sunshine versus Hoppers Crossing in the prelim at Williamstown on Saturday.
Ripping SMS just received. My wife is from Culcairn, and we have two kids at the Calder Cannons and know how hard it is to play AFL. Had a beer at the Narandra pub, 30 minutes above Wagga. And this spec on the map has two AFL players currently at GWS from Damo and Mooney Ponds.
Confirmed everything we've been saying. Didn't mention whether it was a CUB or Tui's product there, but... I imagine it was a CUB.
Let's head to the Essendon District Football League. Aberfeldy in a tight one.
Yes, defeated Granvale. This is a great win. Defeated Granvale by 9 points. But the two of them being on top, share the top two positions all year. Granvale on top probably more the year than Aberfeldy. But good strong wing in a very close tussle. So straight through to the grand final for Abbers. Maribyrnong Park defeated Strathmore by 27 points in the first semi. So Greenvale versus Maribyrnong Park. That's the prelim at Coburg on Saturday.
In the Southern Football League, Dingley sat on top of the table awaiting to play the winners of Morty Alec and St Paul's. What happened there?
Well, Morty Alec defeated St Paul's comprehensively by 41 points in the qualifying final. And Bentley defeated East Melbourne by 20 points in the elimination final. This week, Dingley versus Morty Alec second semi at Springvale on Saturday. So Paul's versus Bentley, first semi at Springvale on Sunday.
We've got our final set in VAFA Premier.
Yes. Now, we didn't expect much to happen in terms of the top four, but it did. So Old Zabs defeated Collegians by 67 points. That pushed Collegians down from second to third because Uni Blues defeated De La Salle by 4 points. So they go up to second. Beaumaris couldn't get off the bottom, but they had a win anyway. They defeated St Bede's by 34 points. Now, Uni Blacks needed St Bede's to lose to give themselves a chance of avoiding relegation. So St Bede's did lose, but Uni Blacks couldn't quite get over St Kevin's, the top team. They went down by 20 points, which means the Blacks remained in ninth, and they are relegated along with Beaumaris. In a dead rubber, their old Trinity to confirm their late-season rally. They've been very good since the break. They defeated Old Melbourneians by 6 points. So the final four, St Kevin 64, Uni Blues 54, Collegians 52, De La Salle 44. St Kevin's and Uni Blues second semi at Trevor Barker Oval on Saturday. Collegians v De La Salle first semi at Trevor Barker Oval on Sunday.
I'll tell you what, cruel luck for Fitzroy in Premier B. A couple of late goals by a very inaccurate Ajax, unfortunately, meant terrible news for Fitzroy.
Yes, Fitzroy started ninth. Was out of them, or Parkdale Vultures, to be relegated. They've gone down by 7 points, just narrowly, to Ajax. And they still had a chance to stay up if Old Scots, who were flying, could beat Parkdale Vultures by the requisite amount, which would have been more than 7 goals or 8 goals. But Old Scots defeated Parkdale Vultures by 35 points, which means Parkdale finished with 20 wins, a percentage of 68.7. In eighth place, Fitzroy finished with 20 points. Fitzroy finished with 20 points and a percentage of 68.4 in ninth place, with Peninsula last place with 12 points, despite beating St Bernards on Saturday by 6 points, actually. So Parkdale and Fitzroy separated by 0.3% in the end final. That's what the relegation battle came down to in the end. Top four, pretty much set. I mean, Ajax had a slight chance to get in, but Monash Blues won, so they couldn't. Old Brighton, 66. Old Scots, 62. Then you go way down to St Bernards, 48. Monash Blues, 40. Old Brighton versus Old Scots, second semi at Box Hill on Saturday. St Bernards versus Monash Blues, first semi at Box Hill on Sunday.
Now, I've just received an SMS from a great bloke called Daniel Harford. His brother's coaching Greensboro.
Yes, that might be right.
Mick Harford.
Well, I'm not doubting that he's right. Sorry, it must be right. Mick Harford. Okay, righto. In place of Robert Hyde.
Well, we knew that Robert
Hyde did tell us that Haas' brother was filling in when he was going to swan around Europe the last 7 weeks of the season.
So he's riverboating.
Yeah, that's right. On the Seine.
While half brother, he's not a half brother.
No, but he's a brother of half.
Half's full brother. Yeah. Oh, you see, you can get in trouble with half.
Yep.
Full brother of half, not half brother of fully. Mick Harford has the reins, and the story continues.
It does.
Pretty exciting.
Met Russell Grubb, the president, his wife that day. Very strong couple. Don't often get a president and his wife watching the footy together. They do it.
What's the only thing worse than...
That's a strong couple, I reckon.
What's the only thing worse than finding a grub in your apple?
Not sure.
Finding half a grub in your apple. See, there's another half joke. sorry.
Keep him coming.
We're going to take a break. Come back. And South Croydon have called it their greatest win ever. I am more than happy to welcome Daniel King, who was a great guest earlier on in the season, back onto the program to talk us through toppling the Tigers. By the way, we will go through some Country Football League results shortly, but as we sit here right now, we're about to hear about the greatest win South Croydon have ever recorded. Ballin casts a mighty shadow in the Eastern Football League. They've won 4 of the last 5 premierships, and their form leading into finals generally is an irrelevance. When the finals begin, the Tigers normally flex their muscles. So when it was noted that the qualifying final to be played between Ballin and Minnows relative to the top flight South Croydon was scheduled, people sort of ticked Ballin off and everybody moved on to their next selection. But South Croydon obviously had some different thoughts about it, and in a game described as desperate both in the third and final quarters by our own Paul Daffy, they survived, thrived, and recorded, according to the now irrefutable Twitter, their greatest win of all time. If it's on Twitter, it must be.
No, that's the club's Twitter account, actually. But yeah. Look, I was just reading Toby Prime's report in the Progress Leader, where it just sounded like a mighty, mighty struggle. I mean, but people weren't giving South Croydon hope into the last quarter.
Well, people sit on one side of the fence. The players on the other side of the fence obviously had very different ideas. The skipper of South Croydon, Daniel King, joins us again on Bush and the Burbs. G'day, Daniel.
Hey, guys. How you going?
Good. Well, you know, I mean, with the final still on and the potential of meeting Bourne again, we don't want to ruffle too many feathers or anger too many tigers, but I guess it's a mark of respect to Bourne, actually, as to how highly valued this win is.
Oh, absolutely. They've been the strongest side in the last last 5-6 years, absolutely. So I did hear your little intro then in regards to Twitter and stuff like that. But we're back in too carried away. It's just a first finals win, but it does show the respect that that Bourne have, not just from us, but within the competition.
Daniel, it's Paul Daffy. I mean, without getting too carried away, I imagine there was a few people getting carried away, wasn't there? What was the reaction like on the siren when you actually did worst single at 17 points?
Yeah, probably the reaction from the supporters and that, like in the rooms, which is always probably the best part about the win, enjoying it with the players and obviously singing a song, but enjoying it with the supporters. I think, a lot of work goes in behind the scenes at all the clubs, and we probably haven't had the reward that, a lot of the more successful clubs have had in the higher divisions for a long time. So, just seeing how it does affect the supporters and the people that do the work, that, gives you a lot of joy from that. So, as I said, you don't want to get too carried away with it, but I do love that part of football.
Daniel, we'll get back to the win shortly, and I'm sure Daff wants to know who were some of the heroes and star turns on the afternoon. But if it is marked by some around the club as your best win ever, that'll only survive 7 days if you can knock off Vermont, because they finished 5 games clear on top and really are the team to beat on the home and away season. So double up against Vermont and we can put this one to bed.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's how footy works, isn't it? One week, it's the next challenge the following week. So, another big one. Vermont this year has been the best side and a really well-ranked club and super strong club. So, hopefully we can get ourselves on a bit of a roll and then see how we go.
There's so much talk at AFL level of weeks off the bye. And we know that in the Final Five system, there is an automatic week off for the top team. I gather, sort of historically, given the demands on a local footballer who works full-time, normally that week off is really appreciated. How does South Croydon approach the fact that you've kept on playing and you might play against a team who, although will be fresh, didn't play football last weekend?
Yeah, I suppose it probably depends on what the list is like. Generally, if it's a super young list or something like that, you might want to play continuously, I guess, in continuity in playing. But like an experienced side like Vermont, they've got a lot of good young players, but they've got a lot of good older players, I should say. So I don't think it's going to affect them too much. Like if we were given the choice, I think we would certainly be looking for that week off before to freshen up. So I don't think that's going to have any hindrance on their performance. We're not expecting it to at all.
Would you describe your team as a young team or a
experienced team? Yeah, I'd say we're a bit of a mix. We've probably got a few older heads that are nearing that 30 at the moment. And then we've probably this year and last, it's probably been a little bit more of an influx of a few of the younger guys being able to take the reins. And as you mentioned earlier, we'll talk about the weekend and the guys that really stood up. But it was probably a couple of the younger guys that did on the weekend, which is quite pleasing.
Well, I mean, I see yourself and Miles Lewis, that you're both very experienced.
Miles Sewell, yeah.
Sorry, Miles. Sewell. Who am I thinking of? Miles Sewell, sorry. One of the members of the famous Sewell family from Newlands Finney outside Ballarat. You're certainly experienced players, but I gather Frank Anderson was given best on ground. He's not an experienced player. Is he a young player?
No, Frankie's only 20, I think. 21 he might be.
He was described as a spark of victory. What did he do?
He got a lot of the ball. He's a quite a damaging player. So like if we can get it into his hands, he's able to run with it, and he's quite hard to tackle. He's got a nice little step on him. So he's certainly a really damaging player for us. And he was on Casey's list last year and played a fair bit with us. And we're wrapped to have him playing full time this year. He committed to us full time, and as the year's gone on, he's probably got better and better in the last. Like at the pointy end of the year, I think the last two or three games he's been best or second best for us. So, he's certainly a player to watch.
Does Frank Anderson realise that he has a name that is more belonging to the 30s than the... in fact, there was quite a famous Frank Anderson who played for Carlton, but He played between 1934 and 1944.
Yeah, I think that might have gone over Frankie's head.
Frank Anderson.
Sounds like a star of the silver screen or something, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, he certainly was a star for Carlton in the 30s.
Daniel, yeah, you were a tradesman, is that right?
Yep.
Now, doing work the last few days, has everyone been wanting to talk footy to you on the job or in the street?
A little bit. I'm actually staying away for work at the moment up in Ocean Grove, so I'll come back for training tomorrow night, and I've got one of my mates that I work with that's been trying to put me off the whole time I've been on the phone here so far. So
it hasn't worked, don't worry, keep going.
Yeah, that's probably as far as it goes, that they more want to rib me and take the mickey out of me more so than talk for serious stuff about footy.
Well, what are you doing in Ocean Grove? Why are you down there?
We're doing air conditioning, so we're doing a new school.
You're working out here.
Basically out here, and then I'm going back and forth to back home for training and coming back to work.
That's a shame in a way. They're sooking at Ocean Grove about the footy season down that way. The Grubbers didn't do very well at all this year. But
yeah.
Never mind. All right, now, but training tomorrow night, has the coach deliberately tried to keep things low-key? The committee try to keep things low-key?
It doesn't really change too much. It's another game you've sort of got to win. And the position we got put in sort of late in the season, we dropped a couple games late. And so we've been in a position that you need to keep winning every game. So we've got an opportunity to win the next game to get in the final. So you don't need much more drive. To get into the grand final, you don't need much more drive than that. So I don't think it'll change too much. We'll just try to sharpen up on a few of the things that we've done better in the last 2 weeks, and hope that puts us in a good spot.
Well, Daniel, as I said, you can have your greatest win in the club's history usurped on the weekend and then trumped a couple of weeks later. But no matter what, the journey remains an exciting one for South Croydon, and we'll keep a close eye on it. And, you know, if DAF calls you again, it's a good sign, because we like talking to winners. So
that means we're still in it.
So that's right.
I'm hoping to get a call next week and the week after.
Keep the phone on, Daniel.
Talk then, Daniel.
Yeah, no problem at all, guys.
And give all the best to the rest of the boys down in the club, including Frank Anderson.
No worries, I'll pass it on. He'll love that.
Thanks a lot. Thanks. All right, stuff. Daniel King there, captain of South Croydon. Frank Anderson from Carlton was a fascinating read, by the way. Picked it up on one of the websites.
One of the websites, yeah.
He was a champion with Brunswick, but in 1934 they were in dire financial trouble, so they offloaded their three best players to VFL clubs. They got a three-figure sum for Frank Anderson, which obviously helped them survive.
Who else?
Not sure.
Doesn't matter, yeah.
Frank Anderson started off in the forward line for Carlton, didn't prove a great success, but quickly moved in the back line. He was narrow runner-up in three Best and Fairest awards.
Good player.
Very good player. Played for Victoria and 155 senior games. Described as vigorous. Reported eight times in as many seasons.
They won the flag in 38.
Yep.
He might have played in it, it looks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
some of the great stars of that era.
And then he went to Preston, where he was captain coach in 45 and 46.
Frank Anderson.
Considered only out of the Carlton team of the century because of their predilection for picking players post the Second World War. Soapy Valance, the only pre-World War I person in the team.
That's outrageous. They had some great. Horry Clover, I was talking about him.
Oh, they had a player, or McGregor, who was a champion.
Yeah, the centreman, yeah.
Rod McGregor?
Yeah. Hackenschmidt, who was the one who had the Norman Clark?
Norman Hackenschmidt Clark, who ended up at St Kilda.
Did he? No, McGregor, not Wally, but yeah, another player. Played many, many games.
Rod McGregor was a champ.
First player to 100 or 200 games or something.
Yeah, they had they had some star turns. They had a little rover that was a ripper in the early days as well. We need to take a break. And just before we do, I don't know how much of country football we'll get through, because we're having a chat with the Ballarat operations manager of their footy league in a moment. But you've got to tell us a story about, I think it's Merbau North and their selection, their triumph at the selection table.
Yes.
Is that the Tim Trail story?
Yes, thanks to Laura Poole for passing this on. Laura's partner Clancy Bennett is the coach. Clancy played his 150th game 20 years after playing his first game, so it took him a long time. But as a coach, Tim Traill, club champion, played his last senior game in 2015, came back, played a few reserves games at the end of the season this year, came out of retirement in the late 30s. Didn't do much, but Clancy Bennett took a chance, picked him in the seniors because I had a few out, and he's kicked four goals, one each quarter, to get Merbu up in the Mid-Gippsland League. So he's the hero of the hour. What a great and a real club legend, club stalwart. So it couldn't happen to a more fitting person. So they're through to the prelim, I think. No, they're through to the grand final, the Mid-Gippsland League. They'll be playing Yanar at Morwell on Saturday. So that's third versus fourth. The top two went out in straight sets.
Stumps day three, the test match between Bangladesh and Australia. Bangladesh, of course, 305 in their first innings. Australia 9 for 377, an overall lead of 72 with one first innings wicket remaining. And the not-out batsmen are Nathan Lyon and Stephen O'Keefe. For break, and when we come back, we'll have a snappy look at Ballarat. Welcome back. Well, we need to be a quick nippy, which is always the weather in Ballarat this time of the year, especially not this time of the year, especially when it's cold in Melbourne. So we're joined by Scott Carey, operations manager of the Ballarat Football and Netball League, ahead of a couple of big finals on the weekend. G'day, Scott.
G'day, guys. How are we going?
Good. Well, let's kick it off with the second semi-final and a trip straight to the GF. Take on Bacchus Marsh.
Yeah, it's a massive game for these two cross-town rivals down the highway just from Ballarat. I don't think these two have played in a final against each other for over 15 years, so going to be a massive game with both towns coming in to watch that one, and we're really looking forward to this game. The two most recent premiers in the BFL as well, with Bacchus Marsh winning last year and Darley winning in 2015, so it's going to be a massive game particularly with a spot in for the grand final on the line.
Who won their games during the year, Scott?
One apiece for both those. So Darley knocked Bacchus Marsh off in round one by 10 points, and Bacchus Marsh got Darley back about three quarters of the way through the year by six or seven goals. So I'd say Bacchus Marsh were going favourites to this game on recent form, but like any derby across AFL or any local footy, they can go either way, can't they?
I would reckon that at Lake Wendouree, players, coaches and fans are getting a little bit nervous. They went out in straight sets last year after finishing on top. And if they don't get over the top of Redan, then they've been bundled out again. This is a must-win for a team that has beaten everybody but Bacchus Marsh this year.
Yeah, that's right. Massive game for Lake Wendouree. And Redan, as most people might know, around country football, are one of the powerhouses across the country football league over the last few years. And certainly playing their best footy the right time of year. So, yes, you're right, there'd be a few nervous people at Lake Wendouree, but I'm sure there'd be plenty of confident people as well. They've done it all year and finished on top of the ladder, as you said, and should go into the game fairly confident.
We'll be unpacking the water skis if they lose this one on the lake, yeah. But this is a must-win. I mean, last year, they were disappointing last year, so here's a chance to get things right. Redan, though, you know, they've had their injury worries, I believe, but their form's very strong.
Yeah, absolutely. A bit early for the water skis, though, up here in Ballarat. We've still got ice on the lake. But,
you can walk the lake at the moment, can you?
You can go from one side to the other, absolutely. But, yeah, no, absolutely right with Redan. Got plenty of quality in that side. Big Oren Stevenson back from the VFL this year, back to Redan, who's had a lot of quality and experience into their midfield group. And they've just got winners across the board. They've got a lot of guys that have played in plenty of finals and grand finals over the last 10 years that are still floating around, and they know how to win these games. So, yeah, really going to have to work cut out for them, Lake Wendouree.
We'll keep an eye on the Ballarat Football League. I reckon there's a blanket over four teams, and don't be surprised if any walk away premiers. Thanks a lot, Scott.
No worries, guys. Thanks for having me.
Scott Carey, their operations manager of the Ballarat Football League. We want to thank the Standard Hotel, Paul Daffy's favourite watering hole in Fitzroy. Hard to find, easy to love. The Standard. And also Toyota's Good for Footy program. Thanks, Steph.
Thanks, Fiona. We'll do it again next week. On Thursday next week.